but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
How worried are you if you're an Oregon State football fan right now? Serious question. You've been mulling it over now probably for 48 hours. How concerned are you about what is going on with the football program at Oregon State? How reactive should Scott Barnes, the athletic director, be? Trent Bray, football coach at Oregon State, week one game against Cal at home. A little disorganized. Beavers looked unprepared. Raised some eyebrows, but we left week one saying, well, maybe Cal's really good. And maybe Oregon State is just kind of finding its sea legs. A lot of moving parts. Offense wasn't great. Didn't run the ball effectively, but you kind of went wait and see. Well, we saw on Saturday, the offense looked pretty good. Brian Gunnarsson's offense piled up 500-plus yards. Malik Murphy threw a bunch of touchdown passes. Offensively, the Beavers were good enough to win this game. Defensively, not so much. Special teams, an unmitigated disaster. Notice how I didn't use an F-bomb there to describe the special team's performance. Trent Bray, Oregon State's coach, leaving the field after game one at halftime, raised some eyebrows when he sort of called the offense out. The sideline reporter said, hey, what about the offensive rhythm? And he said, what rhythm? We have no rhythm. He was very frustrated. He went into the locker room. When Bray was hired, I was told by a longtime lieutenant at Oregon State who knew Bray well. They said, you know, he's not one who's much to work with the media. He's not one who's much interested in hobnobbing with donors and fans. He's a football coach. He knows defense. He is kind of has this reputation of being a little bit of a loner. And so it was going to be a real departure from that for Trent Bray at Oregon State to see him in the role of CEO of the program. And we watched him last year. He kind of went nuts. He even said he went bananas not being able to call the defense, just being the head coach. So he's gone back to taking over the defensive play calling and handling the defense. And the defense kind of looks, eh, you know, and it makes you wonder, is he distracted as a coordinator because he's also doing the head coaching duties? And now I wonder, is he distracted as a head coach because he's doing the defensive coordinator duties as well? Because Trent Bray's team on special teams in this game on Saturday that they should have won, they were good enough to win, good enough to be 1-1, good enough to beat Fresno State, could not get the ball snapped. I know their long snapper got hurt. I was told by one of the Fresno State assistant coaches, Fresno State knew going into the game that Oregon State's long snapper possibly had a broken hand. They were being mindful of it. I think it was on their mind from a special teams perspective. But what we saw at Research Stadium, I'm not going to say I have not seen crazier things because I have, but it was one of those crazy days where they just could not snap the ball in a kick. Couldn't do it on a field goal. Couldn't do it on a punt. Couldn't do it when they changed long snappers. Couldn't do it going one direction. Couldn't do it going the other direction. Every single kick was an adventure. Bring on the dancing bears. It's a circus. Put a tent over it. Amid that, though, what I'm looking for from Trent Bray is poise. I'm looking for discipline. I'm looking for messaging. And so what we got at halftime, again, for the second straight game, was Trent Bray, who, a little off the cuff, looked like a guy who wasn't very disciplined, sounded a little unstately, Here he is talking to Nigel Burton of the CW Network. By the way, the network that has signed on and backed the Pac-12. Here he is talking to Nigel Burton as he goes to the locker room after the first half in a messy special teams first half against Fresno State.
Tell your team in the locker room to settle everybody down and finish this thing off.
Yeah, we're fine. I mean, we've allowed ourselves to create their success, both in special teams, joke, right, and then on big plays on defense, two long runs for touchdowns that shouldn't exist. They did nothing to harm us. We got to stop killing ourselves.
Got to stop killing ourselves. There's a certain decorum that you have as the head coach. There's an agreement you have with the network. I did hear from broadcasters who were nitpicking and saying, hey, you know, this could be an FCC violation. You also had a Fresno State offensive lineman who got called for holding. I mean, excuse me, an Oregon State offensive lineman who got called for holding against Fresno State, who dropped an F-bomb why the official's mic was open. And I left the first half thinking, gosh, is this guy not fit to be a head coach? Does he not have sort of the decorum of a head coach, the poise of a head coach, the control of a head coach? Certainly something I think Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, has to be thinking about today. Because Oregon State today is 0-2. That is the reality for Trent Bray. And this is a business that is built on results. I think Scott Barnes has got to be patient with Trent Bray. He's got to grow him up. Doesn't want to be wrong about this hire. But if I'm the athletic director at Oregon State and my head football coach's team looks undisciplined and disorganized and my head football coach sounds undisciplined and disorganized, I'm going to have questions. And I was not surprised to see Scott Barnes in the postgame news conference standing at the back of the room, as he often does, arms folded, listening to Trent Bray as Trent Bray is apologizing and trying to spin this into, hey, we played well enough to win. We probably should have won. But it was messy. I would love to hear from you as a Beaver fan or as a casual onlooker. How much patience should Scott Barnes have with Trent Bray? 503-417-7575. They're going to get Texas Tech this week. They're going to get beat on the road. They're going to get Oregon on the road in 2 weeks. This is not going to be pretty, Stephen. They're going to be 0-4. Then they got Houston, maybe 0-5. Then comes this Lafayette and Wake Forest. And if they get to 0-6, 0-7, I think if you're Scott Barnes, you have to think about doing something. 0-4 is not going to do it. 0-5 might. 0-6 might. I think you start to think about, you know, is Trent Bray going to be demoted back to being a D coordinator? Is he going to be fired? What do you do if you're the athletic director? Now, I think that decision is 3 or 4 weeks into the future, but I don't think you can go 0-7, 0-8 and be okay with it. 503-417-7575 is the number. Stephen Vaughn, what did you make of it?
I can't believe that it happened. I can't believe that he did it because, like, look, everyone talks like that. Well, not everyone, but most people talk like that. And he wasn't wrong. That's the thing, John. He was not wrong with what he said. The special teams was a joke.
Yes.
And the end of the half was horrible for the Oregon State Beavers. But as the head coach, as the head man, you cannot let that get to you. And he obviously let it get to him. And the other times he's been talking, it's, well, the offense has been great. The defense is great. We should be winning. We should be playing better. Well, you know what? That means you're undisciplined. 6 pre-snap penalties in the game against Fresno State. That's on coaching. That's on discipline. And the Oregon State players are playing the exact way that Trent Bray has been answering these halftime questions. Undisciplined, out of control, not thinking about what they're doing, and it's a problem on the field. And I said this after they lost to Cal. I said, look, they better beat Fresno State, or they're starting at least 0-5, maybe 0-6. And I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, it was a game where Oregon State outgains Fresno State by over 200 yards. You should not lose that game. That is on coaching when that happens. Now, I still think, and I hold out, that Trent Bray is still a good coach. I don't know that he's a head coach, but I think he's not going to get enough time to figure it out at Oregon State. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I talked to Beaver fans, you know, people I have family that went to Oregon State, and they're like, look, I like Trent Bray, but he's not a head coach. And at this point, they need something because, look, if you're going to the Pac-12 next year and you're trying to be a real football program, you need to win some games. And right now, this team certainly does not look like any type of contender, even in the new world Pac-12. maybe not even in the two-team Pac-12 with how that they're playing right now. They look like a real group of five team, and it is not good. They have to do something. And I think Trent Bragg can be a good defensive coordinator, and I think ultimately he may actually be a good head coach at some point in his life. We're just not going to figure it out at Oregon State. It's gone off the rails, and it's just such a 180 from what we had last year. They started out 4-1. We're thinking, man, this was the right guy. But remember when he got hired, John, I think we even talked about this as well. Like, this was soon to get a head coaching job for Trent Bray. Like, he had barely been on the job as a defensive coordinator. It was one of those hires where it just, look, you need to come in and keep it afloat for this, keep this roster afloat and keep this team afloat. And that's what he did. But man, time to take any type of step is not working. And the players are playing as a microcosm of how he is acting off the field right now. And it's not a good thing.
If he had simply gone to the halftime interview and said, gosh, you know, I'm frustrated like a lot of Beaver fans. We're trying to figure out how to snap the ball. Gosh, we're playing great on offense, which they were. And hey, defensively, we've given up some big plays. That has to stop. And he says, thanks, Nigel, and goes to the locker room. I think he's in a much better position today. I think that F-bomb, as little and nitpicky as it might be, that F-bomb becomes much bigger, okay? It becomes a giant one because he looks undisciplined. And then I got to go, wait a minute, is he not in control of himself? Is he in the locker room, like, you know, slamming his hand against the lockers and throwing things because things aren't going right? Is what I'm seeing on the field, the false start penalties, the final minute of the first half was a mess. False start, false start, false start, bad snap, false start. Like, it was just bad. And so I'm left to think, like, oh, wait a minute, is this symptomatic of what is going on out there? I want to go to the phone lines, 503-417-7575. Let's start with Cam and Eugene, listening on Fox Sports. Eugene, go ahead, Cam.
Hey, John, thanks for taking the call. I had the same impression, whether or not Coach Bray was in charge of himself, whether he had control of himself. And I don't think he needs to be breaking coffee cups or anything. If he's just not in control of himself mentally, he's not going to have the presence of mind to make halftime adjustments or do the things that he needs to do to be successful. I wanted it to work. I was excited when the Beavers started off strong last year. I'm a Ducks fan, but again, like, what's good for the state is good for all of us and good for football in the state. And I was at Reno last year when the Beavers started strong and finished weak, and it kind of set the stage for the back half of the first season. And we're just seeing more of the same. It almost reminded me of a situation when a parent says an inappropriate word and their kid hears them and they repeat it. You can tell the lack of discipline and the lack of focus is making its way across the locker room. It's a top-down, you know, coaches install cultures whether or not they are good or they are bad. And the Bray culture is not working at Oregon State. Hot take. I want to get your opinion on this. I got a quick question for you on Oregon after I made an observation on Sunday. But maybe Trent Bray's got to go and it's time for Riley 3.0.
Oh, boy.
Aren't feeling that. I'll tell you this. I know that he can get the Beavers to 7-5.
And I mentioned it today in my Monday mailbag. Mike Riley is sitting around Corvallis. You don't want him to be your long-term solution as your head coach at Oregon State. But if Trent Bray gets to, let's say, 0-5, and he is having a conversation with Scott Barnes, and he goes, look, I'm a coordinator. You know, there's a self-awareness that you have to have, you know, whether you're wearing jeans or shorts or socks or you have to be relative self-awareness of who you are and how you're dressed when you wake up in the morning and go into the world. When you are a coordinator masquerading as a coach, and I'm not saying that's what Bray is, but maybe he gets to that realization and, you know, you're able to wave the flag and go, look, this head coaching thing just isn't for me. I want to focus on defense. I could see a scenario where Scott Barnes says, you take the defense, we're bringing in a CEO. Mike Riley, you have the team for the rest of the season. I wonder if we could get to that point. Let's go back to the phone lines. Roy's in Portland. Roy, I got to get your take on this.
Hey, John. I disagree, man. I mean, you don't want Mike Riley, man. Y'all kind of stop going back to the old well. You got to move on. I mean, stop going back to that well. That's over with. You don't want an old Mike Riley coming in coaching these young kids. I mean, he had his time. Let a young coach come in and cut their teeth. I get tired of that.
Isn't that what we're watching, though? Isn't that what we're watching with Trent Bray? Isn't he a young coach trying to cut his teeth?
Right, but you got to give him at least 2 more years, man. He got put in the situation. You're not in the Pac, and that's another thing with Oregon State. You're not a Pac-12 team anymore. You are a Group of Five team. That's what your budget is. That's who you're playing against. That's what the new Pac-12 is, a glorified Mountain West. That's all it is. I'm sorry. And I know you got Oregon State fans thinking you're not that anymore. You're not with USC. You're not with UCLA. You're not with Washington or Oregon. You are a Group of Five school now. And that's just the reality. And I'm sorry to tell you that. I know you think you're better than what you are, but you're really not. So you're going to be recruiting like a Group of Five team, and you're just as good. You sit in the same mix as Boise State and the rest of the Group of Five schools you're going up against.
What do you make of the way they lost, though, to Fresno State? What do you make of the way they looked against Cal? Does this guy have the ability to evolve and grow into a head coach who can be in command of his program? Do you see it yet? I'm not sure. I'm not ready to fire him, but I'm looking at it going, this sure is concerning.
Well, John, I would have told you, I would have never thought Dan Lanning would have turned out to be the coach he is. I'm telling you, when he first got hired, I said, this guy's going to be there for like... But Dan Lanning has turned into one of the best college football coaches in the country. I don't care what nobody say. Hands down, Dan Lanning is one of the best college football coaches in the country. He is. I put him in the top five. And what he's done at Oregon is unbelievable. I would have never dreamed of this. The way he is crushing teams, and I got Oregon winning the Big Ten, by the way. Mm. I got Oregon as the best program in the country. Right now, if Oregon played Georgia, Oregon would smash Georgia. Because I don't think Georgia, I'm sorry, I don't think our team is going anywhere. We don't have an offensive line. We don't have a coordinator sucks. We probably lose to Tennessee this weekend. So, you know, I think you need to let coaches have their turn, because what I saw Oregon do, I've never seen a Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy's been coaching at Oregon State since 1990. I've never seen an Oklahoma State team get destroyed like that. I mean, Oregon is playing like a machine. And to me, no team in the country is better than Oregon. I'm just looking at, they will probably go undefeated, because I don't think Penn State can beat Oregon. So, I mean, that's my lock for the national champion right now. As my eye test tells me, and my eye test is usually pretty good, I don't see anybody beating Oregon, not even Ohio State.
Wow. But they have to keep it up, Roy. You know how long the year is. And Oregon looked great last year all the way till when they got that number one seed. And then, you know, we saw what happened.
I just don't see it, John, this year.
Yeah. They're playing like a machine. They are.
I can't see anybody beat. I mean, maybe Ohio State, mm-hmm. but the SEC is weak. I mean, Georgia will probably win, but I mean, you're going to have a lot of 2- and 3-loss teams in the SEC.
So you don't believe in the SEC,
Oregon.
You don't believe in the SEC.
I don't believe in it. I think the SEC is the funny thing about it, John. If the old Big 12, Pac-12 conference was around, they would be better than the SEC this year.
Woo, yeah,
because the SEC is terrible. I'm trying to tell you, this year is bad. But that I was thinking about this weekend, John. I was like, man, if the Pac-12 would have just held out, the old Pac-12, they would have been the best conference this year. With Oregon, USC, Utah, Washington.
I got
Oregon. I got Ohio State, Oregon, and you know, maybe Penn State in there. That's the 3 top 10. Those are my locks for the playoffs. The SEC, I don't know who we send into the playoffs. Because I'm telling you right now, Georgia, we may win the SEC, but that's not what I saw last weekend. That's not a Georgia championship team, man.
That's not
a championship team.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Roy, in Portland. I want your phone calls. I want you to tell me the 2 things. How much patience would you have with Trent Bray if you're Oregon State? They'd owe him about $3.6 million if they fired him late this season. I think it's too much money. I think Barnes is probably hoping that they can get some kind of turnaround in week 5, week 6, week 7. We've talked all along that the final 7 or 8 games of the season for Oregon State, there were 6 or 7 wins in there. Like, they could right the ship by winning 6 or 7 down the stretch. Problem is, if you're 0-4, do you still have the locker room if you're Trent Bray? Because if you don't, then you're in real trouble of being 0-5, 0-6, 0-7, and it just caves in on you.
Well, John, that makes me think of a bigger question here is, can a coach like Trent Bray, who was an X's and O's guy, can they work in college football nowadays? Like, we talked about that with Jimmy Rogers. Now, Washington State had a great jump from week 1 to week 2 and looked way better week 2.
Yep.
But Oregon State didn't. Like, do these coaches work as the head coach, as the head man? He doesn't want to be a CEO. He told you that on the show. I don't want to be a CEO. That's not me. Do you need a CEO to win in college football nowadays? You kind of do. Like, you look at the NFL, their head coaches, they're not just running the offense. They're not running the defense. They are CEOs, and I think that's kind of how college football works now.
503-417-7575 is the number. Let's go to Mike. Mike, go ahead.
Say, man, you know, Roy, man, I don't know what's going on with Roy. Say, John, check this out, man. Anytime you get a team that can put a basketball score against another team, then what's happening there is these teams are not equal. You got a Power 5 team playing against a Power 4 team. That's not equal. I'm going to tell you something, man. When you look at boxing has a reputation of being a sport that have some questionable history.
Yes.
You know, through fights being thrown.
Yep.
Now, the boxing commissioner would not sanction half these games that the Oregon Ducks play against other teams. They're not going to put a heavyweight against a featherweight. They're not going to sanction that fight. But yet the Ducks play these little weak teams. They up to what, number 3 in the nation? Now, nobody believes that. They're not better than Texas. They ain't better than Georgia. These teams are playing ranked teams. Oregon have not played a ranked team yet. So, man, I'm not going to buy that Oregon is that great. I'm not going to buy that Dan Lanning is the best coach, because Dan Lanning don't get tested. Dan Lanning is a certified bully that plays against bombs. And you guys don't want to accept that. John, you know, last week some guy had the audacity to call up on the station and say, Mike, don't be calling, because you're always talking about what you don't like. Why don't you give us what you do like? First of all, man, I like vagina. That's one thing I like.
All right. Let's go away. 503-417-7575. Was that a halftime sideline interview?
Yeah, did he just pull the Trent Bray on us right
did
there?
You know, we're supposed to be poised on this show. We're supposed to be in control, and we're supposed to have a little bit of, class on this show. Okay, we're classing it up here. So let's go to the phone lines. I want your phone calls. Oregon, how good is Oregon? Oregon State, how worried should you be? Scott Barnes has backed himself into a tough position with his football coach. He's already in a tough position with his men's basketball coach, Wayne Tinkle. If I'm Scott Barnes, I'm really working right now and thinking about what I can do to help Trent Bray, because, you know, we talked about it being a must win. They lost it. Now they get Texas Tech and Oregon. They're going to be 0-4. Then it's Houston. Is 0-5 out there? Is 0-6 out there? They go to Appalachian State. They have Lafayette. They have Wake Forest. It starts to stack up on you, and if you're Oregon State, you need wins. And all of a sudden, those two Washington State games that everyone had kind of penciled in as wins, they don't look so easy anymore. Washington State's sitting at 2-0. They didn't look bad. I want your phone calls, 503-417-7575.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, you've seen it all. You've heard it all on this show. I want to know what you make of Oregon's hot start. They're up to number 4 in the AP Top 25. Ducks and Penn State setting up for a big one coming up on September 27th in College Station. I would love to hear from you and hear what you think of Oregon, and to hear what you think of what Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, should do as it pertains to Trent Bray. Does he just support him? Does he just hope they can find a long snapper? I mean, because if you really think about it, Oregon State wins the game if they have a long snapper. Like, if they have somebody who can snap the ball, they win that football game. But six times, they did not. And so it's just a facet of the game that's sloppy, and then Bray goes to the locker room, and he's undisciplined, and I'm like, ooh, it's a bad look. Bad look. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's start with Mark in Portland. Mark, welcome.
Hey, yeah, the Oregon State game was the first game that I circled to bet on because I thought at home that they were just going to kick Fresno State butt, but that was a very painful game to watch. I'd still be patient, John. That's the fact that they couldn't get the they couldn't execute a punt was just so frustrating. I mean, it was like you were watching a game in eighth grade. It was crazy. But I wanted to touch on Mike and Roy. Roy calls in with common sense, although I think he's a little nuts with Oregon right now. I don't want to rate Oregon as the best team in the country. I agree that we need to see them play Penn State before we even start to judge them this year. But you know, when Mike has not brought up Colorado this year and Deion Sanders, you know, he was 2 years ago, he was telling us he was going to be competing for a national championship. And we're seeing that that's not happening. Colorado plays in the same conference as Oklahoma State. So I believe they play this year. So we'll see how they do against Oklahoma State, 69-3. We'll see what they do. I mean, he used to try to compare Colorado, still probably does, to Oregon, which is just ludicrous. So you can't take him serious. Whereas Roy calls in with intelligent, you know, takes. He knows a lot about football. Mike's a knowledgeable guy, but he just flat out hates Oregon. I mean, Oregon's lost, you know, three games with Dan Lanning in the last two seasons, one to Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. They beat Ohio State and Penn State, and they won the Big Ten in their first year. Their only other two games he lost were to Washington by 3 points. So Washington played for the national championship, and Ohio State won it. Those are the only three teams he's lost to in the last 2 years. So Oregon is a top 10 team. Pretty much everybody on the planet can recognize that. But Mike refuses to acknowledge that. So he has a problem with Oregon. I get it. And at Oregon State, I would be patient. You know, it's a sad thing to watch what's going on because they're really not, like Roy said, they're not a part of you know, the group of four, I guess it is, with, you know, the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC. They're just, you know, they're kind of like Fresno State and Boise State. They're kind of in that group right now, and it's a hard thing to accept because, you know, they've been part of a major conference, you know, my whole life. So it's a difficult thing. I can't even imagine what Oregon State fans are thinking, but I would be patient right now. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it's one bad game you had. Let's see what happens in the next, you know, the next month or so.
Mark in Portland, thank you for that. I put him on hold there, Stephen. You'll probably notice that. And I'm alerting Stephen just so the listeners know because I wasn't able to punch him up. So it's just my way of telling Stephen I'm good. Mark makes a good point. We tend to overreact. We tend to be knee-jerk. But I don't blame Oregon State fans for being frustrated, especially Oregon State fans who were in the stadium on Saturday. They were booing. They were jeering. They were like, what is going on? But isn't it sort of the fallout that we have watched over the years and really the last 2 years? You know, you go back to that game that Jonathan Smith coached two seasons ago against Washington, 22-20 loss at Reser Stadium. Beavers were ranked in the top 10. They had a chance to win that game. ESPN had the broadcast. That roster we all knew would be gutted at the end of the year. The Pac-12 was done. Days later, Jonathan Smith leaves for Michigan State. Then came that mailed-in Civil War effort, the bowl game. That was that. The curtain came down. That was less than 2 years ago. And here's where Oregon State is today. So I understand why fans are frustrated. I also know, like, if you're Scott Barnes, you don't want to pay $3.6 million to Trent Bray. You don't want to blow this thing up over bad snapping because, frankly, the fact of the matter is, had they been able to snap the ball, they win the game. But I'm concerned about the sloppiness. I'm concerned about the lack of discipline from the head coach down to the false starts. Let's go to James and Eugene. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Hey.
How you doing?
So, I'm good. Hey, so I don't want to, like, pile on Mike, but, you know, it's kind of on you a little bit, too, because you give Mike the platform and you let him continue to go. He's just he's so irrational when it comes to his actual, if these are his real opinions or not. It's like, he might just hate Oregon, that's fine, but you still also can't just point out illegitimate points. Like, Georgia's schedule, they play Charlotte. They play Georgia Tech. They play some team called Austin Peay. They play Marshall. Like, it's the same exact thing that he's just talking about. And the SEC has notoriously done this for so long because they just act like the SEC is just so good that they can rely on the laurels of beating teams in their conference. The SEC isn't like that anymore. Florida State was unranked when they lost, when they beat Alabama. Alabama played Louisiana Monroe. And the other thing is, and they played a team called Eastern Illinois, and it's like one of the last games of the year before they play Auburn. So it's fine if you hate Oregon, but just make sure that you're comparing apples to apples. I mean, it's not an apple and an onion. So
there you go.
All I got.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Let's go to Mark, who's in Bend, Oregon, listening on the ticket. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, John. I'll be real quick here. I went to Oregon State, was a ticket holder for many, many years at Oregon State, but I gave up. I just don't see it. They don't, you know, nowadays you can buy your team, and we're not the University of Nike. We don't have any money. So I just don't see it. The president of the university, President Murthy, she's already come out and said she's not a big athletic fan. She's big on research. She wants to double Oregon State's research grants. And that's her big push. And I'm okay with that. As long as we decide that I don't think we can compete. We don't have the money. We don't have the Phil Knights. We can't buy a team. We're not going to get out of this. As a season ticket holder, I got discouraged and said, screw it. I'll move on to other things. I think we got to look at this and say, the way college sports are going, you can buy your team nowadays, and Oregon State doesn't have the money to do it. They're just not the University of Nike and Phil Knight. And
most aren't, though.
Maybe
most
we
of
ought
them,
to just give it up.
Most, Mark you're exasperated, and I think you speak for a lot of people who have watched this happen in the last 6 months and gone, I don't know what to do, and I don't what happened to my college sports. And the truth is, it's probably never coming back in the form that you once saw it. I do think that there's an effort afoot to try to balance the playing field among 48 or 50 of the top teams in the country and say, okay, everybody should be spending the same amount of money. But the idea that you've got essentially an unlimited budget at a few schools, Oregon's not the only one that's got a war chest, but there's, you know, four or five schools that can really spend. And last year in the college football playoff, when we got to about the quarterfinal and the semifinal round, I started to look at the money. Notre Dame, you can't get the money for because obviously they're a private school. But I looked at, you know, the semifinals. It was Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame. Forget Notre Dame because they're private. But Ohio State, Penn State, and Texas are ranked number one, number two, and number four nationally when it came to athletic department spending. The outlier was Georgia. Georgia was the number three school when it came to athletic department spending. They didn't get to the semifinal. Oregon was $100 million behind Ohio State as an athletic department. Now, I think that gap has been closed, particularly in football, for the Ducks. But Boise State, their athletic department budget last year was $50 million. Ohio State was $250 million. So how do you compete if you're Boise State? You can get to the playoff. Maybe you can win a game in the playoff. But I don't think you can get to the championship game if you're not in the Big Ten or the SEC. And apologies to the ACC and the Big 12. I don't think you can get to the title game either. Really, a true ACC school. I'm not talking about Notre Dame. Maybe Clemson? I don't know. I think it's going to be really difficult for those schools to get there, too. But so what are we talking about? What are we competing for?
But if you're Oregon State, you shouldn't be losing to Fresno State and Cal
no.
at home.
No. And look, Cal had a quarterback. Maybe you can accept the Cal thing. He got beat by a really good quarterback. Maybe Cal's really good. And maybe you're just not good enough right now if you're Trent Bray. Maybe your team, your talent level is not good enough. But the Fresno State game was embarrassing. They were better than Fresno State. They had 500 yards. They dominated the game offensively. And at the end of it, they were in a scramble for their life. Seth is called in. Seth, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Beaver fan here. I thought you had too many other fans when you're speaking to Beaver fans about Oregon State. I just want to say, look, Scott Barnes was in a tight spot when Jonathan Smith left. He had to hire Trent Bray. I think we need to give Trent Bray another year or two and see if he can get us to a bowl game this year. But I think for right now, when we go 0-4, he needs to fire Jamie Christian, the special teams coordinator, just for the fans' sake. I was at the game on Saturday. The stadium was half empty. There were boos on whenever we went on special teams. The fans were booing. I think the fans need something to get excited for. That next winnable, maybe winnable game is Houston on a Friday night,
yep.
late kickoff. The students will be back, but if we don't have some sort of something like firing the special teams coordinator, then the fans aren't going to show up for that game. They're just not. And
yeah, that's where you're worried about. You lose your locker room, you lose the fan base, you lose the donors, you got problems. But I agree, that Houston game at home is huge. And going to Appalachian State, huge. Wake Forest and Jake Dickert coming back to Corvallis October 11th, huge. Lafayette at Oregon State, huge. You know, those are four games that you kind of think Oregon State might be able to win. But the Malik Murphy sideline outburst in week one gets in to do it with a coach. The lack of discipline, the disorganization in week one. Trent Bray coming back in week two, the sideline reporter dropping an F-bomb, frustrated, looks undisciplined himself. It starts to paint a picture. That picture's got to change. Trent Bray's got to get command. Can't talk to the sideline reporter like he's your bro. Chris is in government camp. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. You know, we're talking a lot about patience and things like this, and I think patience for some of these teams is a little bit different. And,
yes.
You know, we talked to Jimmy Rogers. You know, he's got 75 new players. You got to have a little bit longer leash, and we saw from week one to week two the improvement and the changes, you know, and the discipline.
Yeah.
And you see Trent Bray go from, you know, a little bit of a weird halftime thing to off the rails in a week, and they're playing better. So what does that tell you about those guys? You know, you gotta judge this patience and, you know, a little bit differently with these guys because they're in a similar position, but really a lot different positions because Trent Bray doesn't have 75 new players. You know, he's got new players, but Malik Murphy is supposedly a trusted source of offense and stability, but then he goes off the rails.
Yeah.
So where do we draw the line between have we gone too far off the rails and patience, John?
Right. I think you need to give Trent Bray these 2 weeks, and I'm not looking for W's here. I'm looking for poise. I'm looking for the sloppy play to stop. And if you get manhandled at the line of scrimmage, if you get beat and Oregon runs by you with better athletes, so be it. But you can't have a field goal attempt where you snap the ball over the holder's head. You can't have a punt attempt where you snap the ball left and right and you put your punter in a horrible position. You can't have the coach going to the locker room at halftime dropping F-bombs. You can't have the quarterback arguing with a assistant on the sideline. You can't, you know, that stuff's got to stop. It has to. I want you to leave it here. You get the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
can't believe that the Baltimore Ravens lost that football game last night. Can't believe it. Beat themselves again. Sunday night football. Derrick Henry fumbled. Bills came roaring back. Josh Allen, TD. Matt Prater with the game-winning field goal. Same old for Baltimore as they lose that one. A couple other takeaways. Justin Herbert and the Chargers looked really good in week one. 318 yards, three touchdowns in the season opener. Denver, Bo Nix, three turnovers, two interceptions and a fumble and a win. Raised some eyebrows there. Niners find a way to beat the Seahawks. Niners suffering some injuries. Feels like last year, an extension of last year, George Kittle doesn't finish the opener with a hamstring. Juwan Jennings did not return after leaving in the second half with a shoulder issue. Trent Williams banged up. Fred Warner banged up. This is the NFL, but I look at the Niners from last year, and I'm like, they couldn't stay healthy last year. Here they go again. Packers look good. Steven, you love the Packers. They look like a Super Bowl contender.
I love the Packers, John. I think that they are I think they're the best team in the NFC. It's them and the Eagles. One of those teams is coming out of the NFC, and I think with Micah Parsons, you saw in that game against the Lions, yep, who averaged over 30 points a game, number one offense in the league last year, Micah Parsons is an impact player. Like, he's not necessarily going to get sacks, but he put a lot of pressure on Goff. I mean, that's going to help the Packers defense out so much. I'm with you. You're right. The Packers, man, that's my pick this year.
I also think Aaron Rodgers, 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers, four touchdown passes.
Does he got it? Does he still have it?
He had it for one weekend, and then he was really happy to beat the Jets. He talked about that, certainly.
You spoke about the meeting with Aaron Glenn on McAfee a few months ago. Beating him, is there significance in that, since he basically told you to your face that he didn't think you were right for that team?
Yes, that's what he did.
So there's significance in beating him for you?
I was happy to beat everybody associated with the Jets.
Happy to beat everyone associated with the Jets. Just keep it coming. Good win for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gave him some hope. That was the effort they were hoping for. It looked like he could still play. Some trouble in Miami. Mike McDaniel, head coach there, getting criticized. They lost 33-8 to the Colts. They were feeble on offense. Bryce Young got steamrolled. He struggled. He had 154 yards and one touchdown and two interceptions. He also lost a fumble. By the way, he now has seven turnovers in three career season openers.
How about the AFC West? You talked about the Chargers already.
Yeah.
You talked about the Broncos getting the win. I mean, Bo Nix didn't play well, but the Raiders go on the road, beat the Patriots, who have a lot of hype this season. I mean, that division is going to be insane. Like, the Raiders are obviously a more improved team with Pete Carroll, Geno Smith, Ashton Jeanty. Now, Brock Bowers got hurt, but that AFC West, John, that's going to be a division to watch all season long.
What's the toughest division in football? Because I look at the NFC North, and I go, okay, you've got Green Bay, Chicago, Minnesota, and Detroit. That's a tough division. I look at the NFC East. Got the Commanders and the Eagles in there. A little top-heavy, but NFC West, you have the Niners, Rams, Seahawks, Cardinals. You go into the AFC, and, you know, certainly you got to look at...
You got the North with the Steelers, now the good Ravens, Bengals, Browns. I mean, the Browns aren't very good,
but tough.
The other three are good.
What's the toughest division in the NFL? AFC West, maybe, with Chargers, Broncos, Raiders, Chiefs.
I think it's the AFC West. I think the NFC North has something to argue, but we need to see what J.J. McCarthy is, and we need to see Caleb Williams with
We're going to see it tonight.
Yeah, we are. We're going to see Caleb Williams with Ben Johnson. I think that is the other division that is possible just because of what you have with the Lions and Packers and then what the Vikings were last season with Sam Darnold. But I need to see J.J. McCarthy before I can say, yeah, I trust him more than the AFC West. That AFC West is just loaded from top to bottom.
I am eager for week two. You'll see week two give us a Super Bowl repeat of the Chiefs and the Eagles. That's coming up. What games are you excited about for week two as well?
Well, it's interesting because you talk about that Chiefs-Eagles game. I mean, if we're talking college football, if the Chiefs lose, they're 0-2. Would they be out of the college football playoff? I mean, right. That's...
Three-loss team would be out, I think.
Okay, so they'd still be
alive, but you'd be wondering. You start to wonder. But when I look at the week two schedule, I mean, it starts with that Super Bowl rematch, but Commanders are at the Packers on Thursday. That's a big one. Like, you know, how real are the Packers and can the Commanders be what they were a year ago? We're going to find out a little bit about the Bears tonight, but they'll be at Detroit in a game that, like, it could they both be 0-1? Or could the Bears be looking for a 2-0 start there? I think that is a big one.
Broncos, Colts dominated the Dolphins. Yeah. Is that for real? I mean, Daniel Jones, 272 yards passing. He looked awesome. Is that a real thing?
How about Seahawks going on the road to Pittsburgh, where they'll play Aaron Rodgers? So Seahawks 0-1 going to Pittsburgh in a tough situation. You don't want to be 0-2, but you're facing that. And Monday Night Football a week from tonight will give us a doubleheader. It'll be Buccaneers-Texans, and it'll be Chargers-Raiders. So that should be a lot of fun coming up. All right, 4 o'clock hour, we're going to play some Punch and Audio. You're going to hear a ton of sound. We're going to talk a lot about what we've been talking about with college football and the NFL. What do you think the biggest story of the weekend was? 503-417-7575. Was it in the NFL? Was it in college football? Was it the Ducks, who looked fantastic in beating Mike Gundy? I haven't even talked about the Duck wearing the Labubu costume yet. We'll get to all that. Plus, we're going to get a visit from Alan Thayer, who is an attorney. Big Pac-12 versus Mountain West showdown coming down tomorrow. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Is Oregon better than expected this season? Serious question. Are the Ducks better than expected? They're now up to number 4 in the AP Top 25 poll. It's going to be great for the TV audiences, especially on September 27th, as the Ducks will travel to Penn State. Are they better than expected? What was the big takeaway from the weekend? I want to hear from you. 503-417-7575. Big story of the weekend was fill in the blank. You tell me. We got a great hour of radio here for you. We're going to be hearing from a guest who is an attorney who's going to tell us what to expect tomorrow as the Pac-12 and the Mountain West Conference have a big court hearing tomorrow that could tip the scales in that ongoing legal battle. Judge in San Jose, California, in the Northern District Court, will rule on the Mountain West's motion to dismiss the Pac-12's poaching penalty lawsuit. I don't expect that to be successful, that motion to dismiss. So then what happens? We'll talk to Alan Thayer, an attorney, coming up later this hour. We'll deal with Trent Bray, Kenny Dillingham, Dan Lanning. What did he have to say? How motivated was Oregon? Was Mike Gundy really responsible for Oregon being all kinds of fired up, or is that just a team at Oregon that was looking for any extra juice? I think we know the answer to that. Let's play Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Dan Lanning, University of Oregon football coach, used that extra motivation from Mike Gundy to fire his team up. Is it why Oregon beat Oklahoma State? No. But is it why Oregon beat Oklahoma State so bad? 69-3. Here's Dan Lanning.
I told our team right before the game that, you know, it never requires extra motivation for an opportunity to go out and kick ass, but it never hurts when somebody pours gasoline on the fire. So I felt like these guys wanted the chance to go prove who they are. And I, you know, I'm sure I got a lot of respect for Coach Gundy, but I probably, at his press conference, he's probably saying, see, I told you so, right? Like that's probably what his comment is. But that doesn't change the way we have to play to be a winning football team. And we have good players, you know, one of our best. I don't know, Bryce Betcher played good today. You know, he came here for a backpack and a T-shirt. So I'm really proud of those guys on our team that you know, have developed into great players. Again, the guys that watched other people play last year are now playing for us. Like, that's what makes this team great.
Oregon sputtered at the beginning of last season. Didn't look great in beating Idaho. Didn't look great in beating Boise State. Then turned it on against Oregon State and looked really good beating Ohio State at home. We saw last season, different story this season. Oregon looks like it's on jet fuel.
So again, they start at the 35-yard line. Dante Moore in the shotgun. Blitz coming. Oh, what a pickup block. And Moore going deep. He's got a man on the run. DeCorian Moore will take it. The freshman touchdown.
67 yards. I think it took Oregon just a blink to be up 13-0 in this game.
If you had to pick, John, 7 or 10.5 was the win total at the start of the year. Would you take the over or under now?
Now I take the over.
You were on the under before the season, though, right?
I was on don't touch it.
Yeah.
It feels about right. But now I go, okay, they could lose at Penn State, but do I have them losing anywhere else?
Am I crazy to think that we're overblowing this? Oklahoma State stinks.
They're a bottom tier.
They're the worst team in the Big 12, not even close. I get it. Maybe Oregon put it on them 69-3. Oklahoma State doesn't have a run game, doesn't have a pass game, doesn't have a defense. They stink. And we knew they were going to dominate. I need to see Dante Moore do it against somebody good. Like, I get it. He made some darts. He had some NFL throws for sure. But, man, I feel like everyone's buying into Oregon a little too much. I'd still take the under, to be honest with you.
All right. To nitpick the performance, I will say this. I thought Dante Moore might have had a concussion, at least a mild concussion at halftime. They obviously brought him out in the second half. He played well. They scored on their opening drive. Then they sat him down. He was dancing around to shout afterwards. But I kind of wondered when they went in at halftime, does he have a concussion? Now, go back to 2023. He had a concussion at UCLA as well that cost him some playing time. It's the one thing I wonder about when I look at Dante Moore. Now, I don't have anybody at Oregon telling me it was a concussion. It just looked like he hit his head on the turf. And keep an eye on that. That's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, Oregon State could not get a snap on special teams. Couldn't buy a snap.
Uh-oh.
And that's kicked. It's going to be fielded on the run by Fresno State. There is a flag down for the kicking of the football, but it's run back into the end zone.
Oregon State's punter, after the bad snap, tried to kick the ball off the turf. You can't do that. That's an illegal kicking. You can jump on it. You could pick it up and throw an incomplete pass. You could pick it up and try to punt it. What you can't do is kick it like you're on a playground. Fresno State wisely picked it up and went the other way for a TD. John Baxter is the special teams coach at Fresno State. He is one of the best in the country. I've known him for almost 25 years. He worked at USC. He's worked at Wisconsin. He's a special teams guru. I talked to Baxter on the field after the game. I said, man, the special teams at Oregon State. And I just shook my head. And he said, you never like to win that way. There's no joy in that. Still, he had players whooping around him, jumping around. Fresno State was happy. Trent Bray afterwards said he was encouraged despite the loss.
After watching the film from Saturday, you know, it was what I thought it was, which is was very pleased with offense and defensively how they responded and played. A lot of really good stuff. Played hard, made plays. There was encouraging things of we are the team we can be. We obviously know, you know, what led to that loss, but we got to get that cleaned up because the way we played on offense and defense was very encouraging.
All right, I like that guy. That guy sounds like he's poised and in control and disciplined. I need that guy during games.
But he also just threw the special teams under the bus and said, not the offense or defense fault. Without special teams, we win.
But I mean, everybody saw it, right? I mean, you can't say we don't know what it's about. Like, everybody saw six snaps.
Right, but it was also the offensive line who had six false starts. As Malik Murphy threw a couple of bad picks. It was the defense who had some undisciplined plays as well. Like, I get it. Like, you had more yards than Fresno State, but you're throwing out one unit as the only reason you lost. That wasn't the only reason they lost the game.
I think if they snap the ball right and they don't give up that punt return for a TD and they don't blow two field goal attempts, they couldn't even get a field goal off. I mean, special teams cost them minimally 13 points. Minimally. They would have been ahead handily, double digits, late in this game.
They need to do the Kenny Dillingham tryouts for special teams.
Yeah, and remember, Dillingham reacted poorly last year in calling out his own kicker. Arizona State lost, by the way, at Mississippi State. Kenny Dillingham talked about it.
Yeah, like I told him, we're down 17-0 on the road, and we battled back, took the lead, and we're that close to winning the game. The reality is, right, we're not in conference play yet. You know, we got one more game that we got to go play really well in at home. And then we enter conference play. And hopefully we learn from this and get better and better and better. The goal is to be playing your best football towards the end of the season, not at the beginning of the season. So hopefully, you know, we learn from this first half where we started a little slow on offense and we can kind of get in a rhythm moving forward.
Live and learn, new position for Arizona State. They were favored at an SEC team on the road. They lost the game outright. Meanwhile, Oklahoma's John Mateer. They beat Michigan. Mateer talked about it after.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, walking in, game day being here, you know, just the environment. It's something you dream of, and it's something I've always dreamed of. So, I mean, to be able to do it, and I mean, it's a blessing. And I looked at it that way. Like, this is a blessing from God, and the opportunity is great. And play as hard as I can, and it's already written. So I was getting a little anxious, you know. I wanted to play, and, you know, it's a long week, and it's good. You know, you get to watch film. But I was really excited to go, and these fans are awesome.
Fans are awesome. John Mateer was awesome. Let the hype begin. Oklahoma looks good. Michigan dropping way down in the rankings in the top 25 after the loss. Steve Sarkisian, Texas coach, they got right against San Jose State. They just didn't boat race San Jose State enough, and reporters still nitpicking Arch Manning, making fun of a facial expression that Manning made when he got hit during the game.
Arch Manning seemed to be having some throwing pains by the
according
fourth
to
quarter.
Who?
Arch.
Arch said that to you?
No.
Oh, according to who?
It just looked like he was...
He doesn't have any.
Is there an explanation to why it looked like that?
I don't know. I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the bathroom, so I don't know what faces you make when you're doing that.
Sark, you got to stop with this. This is exactly what I'm talking about with the unbecoming sort of, you know, there's a decorum you have as a head coach, and Sark is slumming it here. Just answer the question. Just talk. You know, don't try to be cute and funny. It's one of these moments where he doesn't help himself.
Well, we talk about coaches you can't trust going forward to the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Sark. James Franklin, top of the list for me. Like, and this yep. is the reason why. It's these type of comments.
Don't trust him. Meanwhile, University of South Florida's kicker with a game winner against Florida. Big moment in Florida.
Dramatic up for the win, and there it is. 18-16, the final score, and the Bulls explode off the bench.
The Bulls explode. They're ranked. They look good. Nice moment for South Florida. Questions around the Gators.
Huge game. Huge game next week, John. South Florida now takes on Miami at Miami. So, I mean, if they get Boise State, Florida, and Miami, they're by far the lead of the Woo! Clubhouse for the group of five teams.
There you go. Good win for them. The 49ers were at the Seahawks. It looked dicey late.
Going for the win. He swinged out into the end zone. Wasn't open. Purdy keeping it alive. Brock Purdy lofts one. It is Tonjes. Touchdown, San Francisco.
49ers get out of Seattle with a W in the NFC West. They're banged up, but they found a way. Tough one for the Seahawks, who now have to go on the road in week two. See how that comes out. Chip Patterson says Oregon might be significantly better than expected. Talking about the Ducks here.
Because we were talking about a floor for Oregon. We're like, oh, they're so talented. Like, they're not going to, bottom's not going to fall out. But we could easily see this team fall into 9-3 or 8-4. And I just don't see that whatsoever. But Oregon, even coming in, having Oregon as a top three team in the Big Ten, they are significantly better than what I had coming into the year.
Significantly better? Yes, maybe. I don't know. We have to judge Oregon on its games against Penn State, the game at Iowa, how they look late in the year at Washington, what they look like in a playoff game. That's what's going to judge Oregon this year. They were the number one seed and undefeated last year going into the college football playoff. And disappointing loss. I'm sure Dan Lanning is preaching, hey, we've done what we wanted to do against these first two opponents. Moment was nice. Moment is gone. We got to focus. We got to get better because better competition is coming. But still, Dante Moore looks like he could be the real deal. Guys like DeCorian Moore look fantastic. They've got so many weapons at Oregon on display in this game against Oklahoma State on Saturday. And the Oregon Duck dressed like a laboo-boo. Come on. If you don't know what a laboo-boo is, ChatGPT it or Google it. Really nice moment. Derrick Henry and the Ravens lost. Henry fumbled. The Bills came back. Here's Henry.
Well, first of all, I got to take care of the ball. Told my teammates at the game, put the boss on me. I own it like a man. Maybe emphasize taking care of the ball since we got back. It's a big emphasis, especially in our room, like running back, taking care of the ball, keeping it high and tight. Not like a lackadaisical and they made a play, but you know, I put this boss on me. When I take care of the ball, I feel like it'd be a different situation.
Derrick Henry's taking accountability for the Ravens' loss. Kind of a big moment for him to accept that. And obviously, if you are a Ravens fan, this is more of the same looking back to last year. Is this a team, Steven, that just can't get over itself in some ways?
I think I don't want to say that, but it really seems that way. Again, another thing, can't you trust the Ravens? I don't know that you can trust them at all. And look, they were awesome. They should have won that game, and they completely blew it at the end, and they put up all these yards, but they somehow lose. We talk about it all the time. Can you get over
command.
The hump?
They were in command.
Can you
game.
Get over the hump and beat Mahomes? Not by losing games like this. That's not how you win. You're not going to win anything when you're blowing games like this. I don't know. I love the Ravens. I love Lamar, but man, that was a gut punch if you're a Raven fan. How do you lose that game on the road, week one? You're dominating, and you're in control, and you lose that game? Man, that's tough.
Cowbells were going nuts at Mississippi State. We mentioned earlier the Arizona State loss in Starkville. ESPN's Dave Fleming summarized it.
It was maybe the loudest that I've ever heard it. I mean, it's what I love about it. Isn't it incredible? This was a team that couldn't beat anybody last year. Couldn't beat anybody. And this place was like it was a playoff game. It was so loud, I couldn't hear Brock. I couldn't hear Kevin Connors in studio give the updates. We couldn't hear anything. Amazing.
You know, I've thought for a while about Autzen Stadium and whether or not the University of Oregon would expand Autzen or would it dare to build a new football stadium, because there is a revenue stream that Oregon's missing out on as they sell out 60,000 or so seats every Saturday. And I've wondered, like, could they add 15,000? Could they get to 20,000 more? What's the demand? Oregon, I'm sure, is studying this right now. I'm positive of it. But do you lose some of the atmosphere? Garrett Classy, who is the athletic director at Fresno State, was down on the sideline at the Oregon State-Fresno State game, and I talked to him. He's a former deputy AD who worked at Oregon. And he's talking about Bulldog Stadium in Fresno. They might have to tear it down and rebuild a new stadium. They're in that feasibility study mode right now. And he said to me, he said something interesting to me. He said, it's like Autzen in the way that it's built on the berm. And he said, you can't really effectively expand it. You can't really renovate it. You kind of have to rebuild it. And if you're going to rebuild it, you might as well rebuild it. And so it got me thinking about Autzen. Would Oregon ever consider a rebuild of Autzen or an expansion of Autzen? And if so, do you lose the acoustics inside the building? Because of all the, you know, I've been to tens and tens and tens and tens of football stadiums, college football stadiums around the country, in the ACC, in the SEC, in the Big Ten, in the Pac-12, the old world Pac-12, the Big 12. I've been all around. Autzen Stadium has got some acoustic vibe to it that makes it play louder than it is. It has to do, I think, with the that it's all enclosed and it's in a circle. It has to do kind of with the angles and the pitch. The sound just bounces around that building in a way that, like, some other places don't that are bigger. So I kind of wonder, like, you know, I hear this talk about Mississippi State and Starkville, and I've been down there to Davis Wade Stadium in Starkville. I've been there. It's a nice stadium. But I wonder, like, if you start to get too big, do you lose some of the charm? And then I hear something like this, and I'm like, no, you don't. But I kind of wonder, you know, Autzen with 10,000 more seats, Autzen with 7,000 more seats, Autzen with a lot of the premium and club seating redone. You know, where is sort of that line of getting it right if you're the University of Oregon? We'll talk about that and a whole bunch more coming up. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Coming up later this hour, we'll get a visit from an attorney who's got his eye on this Mountain West versus Pac-12 lawsuit that is going on. How do you make a lawsuit interesting? Well, you bring on an attorney like Alan Thayer, who will be joining us coming up later this hour. And Stephen and I have the 5 at 5 coming up top of the hour, and we lead you right into the football. So we will have that coming down the pipeline. Stephen, what did you think the biggest story of the weekend was, by your view? Biggest sports story of the weekend?
I think it was the Sunday Night Football game. I do think it was the Ravens blowing their lead against the Bills, because it seemed like the Ravens are better pretty much every single spot than the Bills. Like, defensively, the Bills could do nothing. Offensively, the Ravens have weapons everywhere. DeAndre Hopkins comes in as a new addition, has an incredible one-handed catch for a touchdown. It certainly seemed like the Ravens were the much better team, and then they end up losing. So then it makes you question, like, is there something actually wrong with that entire franchise right now? Is something broken where you need to completely fix something, or is it just bad luck? But this happens all the time for the Ravens. So for me, that was the biggest story Saturday or Sunday.
I thought John Mechir in Oklahoma beating Michigan was big. I thought that, you know, Aaron Rodgers throwing 4 touchdown passes against the Steelers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is a weirdo. We all know that. Like, he's going into some sensory deprivation chamber in Southern Oregon 1 minute, and then he's covering himself with patchouli oil another moment, and he's saying something outlandish on McAfee another moment, and then looks terrible, look like he's done. Then he throws 4 touchdown passes and beats the team that disrespected him, and you kind of go, wait a minute. It's a soap opera. I mean, it's, you know, it's not The Bachelor. It's reality TV, but it's not The Bachelor. It's more like, you know, the quarterback, the weird quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. But I kind of think Oregon was like one of the big stories of the weekend. A lot of people I know who live out of market reached out to me after Oregon's performance and were like, wow, look how good they looked. Look how good they are. They're locked in. They're playing with something extra after last season. Now, I'm pumping the brakes a little bit, because I'm going, wait a minute, I kind of got swept into this last year. And after they beat Ohio State, what did we say? Oh, they could beat anybody. They were the number one team in the country. They were the number one seed in the college football playoff. And it didn't go well. Your Ravens story and my Ducks story dovetail. Because the Ravens got to the playoffs but couldn't get past fill in the blank in week one. They look like a team that can't get past themselves, even though they should have won. It's a reminder of how long the NFL season is and how unforgiving sports really is. If you really think about it, it was part of the sobering experience that last season brought in college football, was Oregon looked like it was the best team in the country last year for a long time. And the College Football Playoff Selection Committee said, this is the best team in America. This team deserves to be the one seed. And then we saw the one seed get absolutely throttled by Ohio State. So enjoy this, whatever it is. If you're 2-0 and you're Oregon, you did what you should do to an FCS team in Montana State that's pretty good. And then you embarrassed Mike Gundy, who opened his mouth. He never should have said anything. He should have just been gracious and got beat 50-10. Instead, he opened his mouth and he got beat 69-3. You know, I think Oregon, there was a little something extra for Oregon. And I think Oregon could have had 80 had it wanted to. If Oregon really was mad, they could have had 80. I am mildly uncomfortable with anointing Oregon as a contender now, even though it's the fashionable thing to do and all of the national pundits are looking at it. Let's pump the brakes and let's just go, hey, it's a really long season. In the NFL, we don't overreact this way one way or another. The Chiefs lose and we go, it's okay. They lost. They had like five losses and went on and won a Super Bowl. The 49ers barely win. We go, okay, it's a win. You know, the Raiders win. We don't automatically go, gosh, could they be a contender? Why? Because we know that the NFL season is long. We know it's unforgiving. And we know over time, these teams tend to tell us who they are. Give Oregon time to tell us who it is.
What?
Penn State, oh, Iowa, season finale against Washington. That's what we're going to know.
Well, that's the thing is, if you thought Oregon was a national championship team before this season, obviously nothing's changed. But I haven't seen anything on the field after these two games that would change your mind of that. Like, I understand you won by a ton of points. Awesome. You also were favored by about 30 in both games. So, yes, you overexceeded expectations, but at the same time, you're playing teams that aren't even close to your level. So I wouldn't adjust any type of power rating to the Oregon Ducks. They look really good because they're supposed to against these teams. I think we're overrating just Oklahoma State in general. Like, that team is horrible. And I said this last week, and on the jury, you guys were talking about, like, well, there's always a chance. No, there was no chance. There was no chance that Oklahoma State had in this game. It was going to be a blowout from the get-go. So I'm not ready to raise Oregon and say, look, they're national championship, like, number one team in the nation right now. They could still do it. I thought that this start of the year, but I'm still going to take their under because they've played nobody on this season. Even this game against Northwestern is more of a PowerPoint or more of a point of recognition than any game they've had so far this year. It's at least on the road in the conference game in a weird environment on that stadium on a lake. Like, if they crush this game, I think it's more impressive than any game that they've had all season long.
You can, though, look at Oregon and go, hey, the questions you might have about them aren't there. Dante Moore looks good. The supporting cast looks phenomenal and deep. The defense is dominant. Everything is there. And the athletes are there. The coaching is there. But my thing is, you know, there are some things that could derail this. You get an injury at quarterback, and then maybe you're not as good as we thought with the backups. I don't know. Not as dynamic. You go on the road to Penn State. You get exposed a little bit. And maybe they're too physical for you. Then all of a sudden you go, okay, wait. Oregon's built like a gazelle, not built like a bulldozer. And all of a sudden you go, James Franklin and Penn State might have something to say about what Oregon is in the end. 503-417-7575. What do you make of Oregon's dominant start to this season? David is in Astoria. Kindergarten cop. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. I've been a Ducks fan for a long time. My first games, I got to high-five alley-oop. And I think I've got some perspective. And okay. One of the things that you've said it before, and that I think is true, that, you know, teams tend to build up to excellence. They hit a high water mark and then maybe they recede, or maybe next year they hit a little bit better higher water mark. And I think the difference between this year and last year is legitimately that they started out more solid, more together, more organized, more sure of themselves. Two wins against lesser opponents doesn't tell us everything, but the way they looked, regardless of who they were playing, does tell us something.
They look capable. It's also a long season, and I think we're still mentally stuck in the old world of college football. And I saw it after week one and even in a little bit in week zero. When teams lost games, everybody went, they suck, they're out of it. And they're not. Boise State's not out of this. You know, Boise State lost to South Florida, but they're not out of this. Boise State could come back and be 11-1 and change some minds. But the Power Four teams that don't have three losses are all kind of in play until they get three losses or they suffer a really bad loss that no one can forget. So it's important to remember that Ohio State didn't just win the national championship last year. Ohio State lost at Oregon. Ohio State lost at Michigan, or home against Michigan.
Home to Michigan.
So they lost two games, one of them at home, and came back and won it all. Texas isn't out of this as much as we want to write them off. Alabama looks suspect, right? But they're not out of it. There's a lot of ball to play, and I think there's going to be a mental recalibration that we all have to make with college football that is going to take us a few years to make because we haven't done this playoff thing more than once in this 12-team format.
And that's hard to think about because we think in the NFL, you almost kind of break it in force, right? Like now they play 17 games, so you can't go 4-4-4-4, but it's always like a fourth of a season you kind of recalibrate. Do we need to start doing that for college football, even for like a team like Oregon State and Trent Bray? Like they're going to start 0-4, but what's the next four look like?
Weird anyway. That Oregon State schedule is weird because of how it gets set up. I mean, think about the difference between the Oregon schedule and the Oregon State schedule. Okay, you give Oregon State, you know, Cal and Fresno State to start the year. You give Oregon, Montana State, and Oklahoma State to start the year. Oregon has had easier opponents to start this season than Oregon State has. And yet, we're going to judge Oregon State very differently. And then Oregon State has been sloppy, and Oregon has been very efficient and looked great. I mean, no way around that. But there is a bias that gets formed when we kind of look at these things and we treat them differently, and they are different. Like Oregon and Oregon State are very different schools now that one of them is playing in the Big Ten and one of them isn't. One of them is still in a conference with two members right now until July 2026 when all those new members come in. And so it's not the same, but let's just focus on the Power Four right now. I'm looking at Power Four teams, and I'm saying everybody is a contender for the playoff until they have three losses. Everybody. If you have one or two losses right now, you are not out of it. And that is a hard thing for us to think about because we're looking at teams like Alabama that lost a game and Michigan that lost, and we're going, they're out, they're out. They're not out. If they come back, and those are one-loss teams at the end of the year, they're going to be held up by their conferences as they should be in the playoffs.
Well, think of a team like Clemson, who loses to LSU in a close one and then has a tough game with Troy. And now they're, you know, round number 20 in the AP poll. But
they're not
out of it. They haven't played any conference games. They snuck in last year because they barely made the conference championship game. So you're right. Like these non-conference games matter, but they also don't matter.
If you're 10-2, you are in this conversation. You are a potential playoff team. And it's as simple as that if you're in the Power Four. If you're in the Group of Five, it's different math. Oregon State not getting there with two losses. You know, they're not getting in the conversation. Washington State probably not getting there with the schedule that they're going to play. And you know, obviously they go on the road and they play Ole Miss, so maybe they make hay in that game. But you know, if they go undefeated, they're going to be compared against the Boise States and the South Floridas and UNLV. The Group of Five is a different animal, so it's a whole different calculus in the Group of Five. It's more like you can have one loss, but it better be a good loss, like Boise State last year at Oregon. So different math, different kind of pacing to the season. If I'm Oregon, I have to be really happy about two things. There's two things in particular with Oregon that really kind of jump out to me. One of them is Dante Moore has looked like he's capable of leading a team deep into the playoffs. That was a question. The second thing is look at the schedule. Oregon's schedule starts with Montana State, then Oklahoma State, then Northwestern. You couldn't have drawn this up better. If you were Oregon and you were sitting around going, okay, we need a FCS opponent that we know we can beat in week one so we can work some things out, then give us a really bad Power Four team, bottom of the barrel, low-tier Power Four team. Okay, we got that game at home. Now let's go on the road, but let's not go on the road against a team that we think can beat us. Let's go on the road against a conference opponent that we should beat 9 times, 99 times, 90 times out of 100, whatever. So you get this winnable road game under your belt. Then let's go back home and play our rival in a game there's no shot we lose. And it's a bit of a tune-up in front of our big first test on the road at Penn State. So you get this Civil War game against Oregon State where you can kind of shut some guys down potentially and look classy doing it if you're Dan Lanning, knowing, hey, Dante Moore's got enough snaps, DeCorian Moore's got enough catches, our guys have, you know, Kenyon Sadiq has been running around, everybody's ready for Penn State, let's go in there healthy, let's get some guys out in the third quarter. I mean, it just lines up beautifully for Oregon. This could not have gone better, the way that the schedule unfolded for Oregon. I think that should not be lost in this conversation. All right, coming up, Mountain West Conference and Pac-12 have a big hearing tomorrow in a Northern District Court in San Jose, California. This could be the beginning of the end of this lawsuit with the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. We'll find out more with attorney Alan Thayer, who will be joining us next to talk about it. 5 at 5 coming up after that.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
The Pac-12 and the Mountain West Conference, they've got a hearing scheduled for tomorrow, 10 a.m. in San Jose in a courtroom where a judge will rule and hear the arguments on behalf of the Mountain West Conference and the Pac-12 Conference. Motion to dismiss the Pac-12's antitrust suit. We've been talking about this thing for a while in the show, and we've leaned heavily on our next guest. Alan Thayer is a business lawyer. He's the founder of Innovative Law Group in Eugene. And he has all along the way held our hand to help us understand what is going on with this. Alan, give us an idea of what this judge is going to be up against tomorrow, 10 a.m. in that courtroom.
First of all, this is not the original judge in the case. The original judge was an expert on antitrust law. This judge is an expert on intellectual property law, which is probably even more of an egghead legal discipline. And so this judge will be very well prepared for the hearing. And I think she'll ask good questions of the attorneys on both sides.
The possible outcomes here, for a while I've thought, you know, this will end with a settlement. But the Pac-12 is saying that, you know, they signed the poaching penalty agreement and they signed it and believe that it's unlawful. The Mountain West is saying, hey, what are you talking about? You signed the agreement. Now the Mountain West asking for the judge to dismiss this case. What are the possible outcomes in your mind tomorrow in court?
Well, probably the best possible outcome would be the judge would say, yes, this motion to dismiss is denied, and I will issue an opinion in the next couple weeks, which will lay out the reasoning, and then the judge will give a thorough analysis of the relevant and applicable antitrust law. That would help the parties a lot, because I think that would then help them equalize their expectations of what may be the ultimate result, and so that it is easier for them to reach a negotiated settlement. That would be the best possible outcome.
Pac-12 would probably love that. Is there a chance that in court that the attorneys for both sides will get an idea of what the judge is thinking based on the questions that are asked, or is that normally held closer to the robe or closer to the vest?
Oh, it depends upon the judge and it depends upon the case. But usually if the judge is asking harder questions of one side versus the other, If the judge is making a case for one side when questioning the other attorney, that's usually thought to be a pretty good indication. That's not always true, but that's usually a pretty good sign.
Is there a chance that the judge doesn't rule, that, you know, listens to both sides, asks questions, and then just says, thanks, and, you know, let me think about this? I had one attorney suggest to me that was a possible outcome here.
I would even suggest that's the most likely outcome. And the words the judge could be using is, I will take it under advisement and issue an opinion. This judge is going to want to get it right.
Yeah.
And She is really laboring under the shadow of Judge Claudia Wilken, who, of course, had the O'Bannon case and the Alston case and the House case. So she's going to want to get this antitrust case right.
The Mountain West argument, how do you see the Mountain West argument? How do you see the Pac-12 strongest arguments? Because, you know, as you said, you lead with your strongest argument. You know, I think you said that a couple of visits ago. What is the strongest argument for the Pac-12 tomorrow? And what is the strongest argument for the Mountain West Conference?
Well, I think the Mountain West strongest argument, and this is getting a little bit into the weeds in antitrust law. In antitrust law, there are two types of cases. There are per se illegal cases, which if they prove that you did this, it is wrong. Price fixing is one of those per se violations, but so is allocating customers. And here the customers would be the schools that could join one conference or the other conference. And so the Mountain West wants to avoid a per se case. And so their argument is that this is an ancillary provision, and that this is really all about the scheduling agreement. Mm. And so you look at the scheduling agreement and you review it under what's called the rule of reason. And the rule of reason, you look at the relevant market, you look at the market power of the parties, you look at any anti-competitive effects, and you look at pro-competitive effects. So the Mountain West would say, well, this is pro-competitive because by agreeing to play these games, we allow the Pac-12 to continue. That's their best argument, I think. The Pac-12's point of view is going to go, wait a minute, you can very easily have a scheduling agreement without having poaching penalty provisions. And so, no, these two are not, these two may be in the same document, but these are two separate things. And to require an illegal, anti-competitive allocation of customers as a condition of playing some football games. No, you look at those two things separately, and the allocation of customers is per se illegal. That would make the Pac-12's case a lot easier to prove.
Alan Thayer, our guest, Innovative Law Group in Eugene. Again, the Pac-12 Mountain West Conference, ongoing litigation. The Mountain West and Pac-12 will be in court, or their attorneys will be in court, 10 a.m. tomorrow in San Jose, California, as a judge there will hear the arguments, a motion to dismiss this case. A lot of speculation, very easy for us. You know, we stayed at a Holiday Inn Express. We're all legal experts, but you've been in that chair. And what are the attorneys doing right now? How much self-scouting? Are they looking at their own arguments, looking for weaknesses? What are the attorneys on both sides doing right now?
I think by now they're making sure they get a good night's sleep tonight.
Yeah.
So they're refreshed and ready to go, and perhaps trying to memorize their opening and closing arguments. A lot of the heavy lifting has been done, and actually it's been done for quite a while now. I don't have in front of me the date that the Mountain West filed their motion to dismiss, but I do have a copy of the Pac-12 conference's opposition to that motion. And that was filed on September 24th, a year ago. So they have done a lot of the heavy lifting and the arguments. I suspect that because of the settlement discussions, they know the other side's arguments pretty well. And I think attorneys for both sides will be ready to argue. That having been said, if I could pick one side or the other to argue, which is how lawyers sometimes look at these, boy, they've got an easier case, they've got the harder case. I think the Mountain West has the harder case here.
Mountain West has got a university president who is a, I'm using air quotes here, law expert, because, you know, there's an academic law expert and then there's a real world law expert. You know the difference. Can that help or hurt? Or, you know, we watched the Pac-12 presidents kind of meddle around in the media rights space. And I kind of looked at this and I think it's, you know, the University of New Mexico's president is a legal expert and former judge. Is that a help? Is that a hurt, hindrance? How do you view that?
Well, it could be either. The fact that he was a judge, that could help provide some insights to the Mountain West commissioner. Sometimes lawyers, when talking to their clients, giving news that their clients don't want to hear, it can be very, very difficult communicating that. And to have a former judge in the room with the Mountain West commissioner, that could be a help. Hopefully, because he's a judge, he won't make the mistake of substituting his judgment for that of his attorneys.
Yes.
But instead, we'll be able to listen to them and act accordingly. Hopefully, that helps.
Pac-12, if they get a negative outcome, obviously there's an appeal there. But let's say it falls the Pac-12's way and this motion to dismiss is denied. Then it goes presumably into discovery and heads towards litigation. But will there be a flurry of potential settlement discussions at that point? Is this a pivot point in possible settlement talks?
Well, I think so. Absolutely it is. When I look at litigation, there's a number of steps, but each step in the litigation process gives an opportunity to settle the case. And this is why I think an opinion from the judge laying out her statement of the law on antitrust, I hope she writes this opinion and hopes that it can help the parties move forward with settlement.
Alan, I appreciate your expertise. We'll see what's going to happen. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, John.
There he is. We go to a lawyer. We're not just spitballing here. It'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow morning in court and beyond for the Pac-12. The 5 at 5 is looming, and it's a doozy. Stick around for it. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, we've got a short show today due to the Monday night football. It was a big Sunday NFL weekend. 49ers beat the Seahawks. Apologies to the Seahawks fans. Niners came through in the clutch. That NFC West is going to be a tough, tough, tough division. But we'll have NFL football coming up right here on 750 The Game. And all season long, we'll have you on Monday nights and Thursday nights. And, of course, Steven's going to give us the 5 at 5 here in a second. But later this week, we've got big guests coming down the pipeline. Bruce Barnum, the Portland State coach, will be with us. Trent Bray, the Oregon State coach, will be with us on Wednesday, probably sitting on his warming seat as he talks to us. We'll get a visit from an Oregon Ducks assistant or player, I am told, on Thursday's show. The Ducks are traveling to Northwestern this weekend. Dante Moore and the Ducks will be on the road for the first time. A lot to talk about, plus Sean Lewis, the San Diego State head coach, will be with us on the show, among others. But before all that, Stephen has prepared the 5 at 5.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
All right, John, the AP poll is out. The new AP poll is out. And the Oregon Ducks, they are rising up the AP poll. They moved up 2 spots. The number 4, Ohio State, still the number 1 overall team after their win over Texas in week 1. And in their week 2 win, Penn State, they're the number 2 team. They struggled a little bit against FIU in week 2. LSU, they're number 3 as they look good. The Miami rounded out the top 5. The biggest followers, Clemson, they moved down another 4 spots after they struggled with Troy this week. South Carolina, they moved down 1 spot. Florida State, they moved up 4 spots. They are now a top 10 school. And Michigan, after their loss to Oklahoma, they moved down 8 spots. Seems a little egregious to move down 8 spots when you go on the road to lose at Oklahoma, but it is what it is. Now, we talked about Utah last week, John. They've moved up five spots. I think that's the right call. They're number 20, South Florida. They entered the poll at number 18 after their win over Florida. There is one funny vote, though. I'm not going to call her out. There's the AP voter who still has Florida in the top 25. Not only that, John, they lose to South Florida, but move up two spots in her poll. Just saying, sometimes the AP polls, we need to take that with a grain of salt.
Sometimes you wonder if they're watching the games. And I wondered that last week. We wondered that last week when Utah, you know, just absolutely looked dominant and throttling UCLA, and then they check in at 25. Just wasn't enough movement. Nice to see the voters react. There tends to be a lag in the reaction from voters. I think that Oregon is justified in being fourth. I also think that the TV networks are the real winners here, because none of this stuff matters until the end of the season or when the College Football Playoff Selection Committee gets together. But Oregon and Penn State will be playing that game in College Station that, you know, has big time ramifications coming up here on September 27th. And right now it looks like a top five matchup and a big one for television. The Ducks, I thought, looked really dominant, looked good. Yes, it's been inferior competition. I talked about this earlier. Dante Moore has been fantastic. Montana State is not Ohio State or Penn State. And certainly Oklahoma State does not look like even Wisconsin or Iowa. But this season's unfolding nicely for Oregon. Will Stein, the play caller, getting Dante Moore and the rest of the offense in great position. And Oregon now goes on the road this week at Northwestern with a chance to get another tune-up game, then a return home against Oregon State. Then it's on to that whiteout game at Penn State. But you're going to see a lot of movement in this top 25 poll at the beginning of the year. The voters are encouraged to make dramatic changes if they think they have the teams out of order. They're supposed to do this, but I don't know how you move Florida up after they lose to South Florida. Moving on to number two.
Number two.
Well, we've talked about it all show, John, but Trent Bray, man, he's been the talk of college football. Of course, it's mostly his halftime outburst that he had in the Pac or in the Pac-12 game against Fresno State on the CW. Talking with Nigel Burton at halftime, he goes off on the special teams. I think deservedly so. He goes off on the special teams. They deserve to be yelled at. I don't think he was wrong in everything, but he's been kind of the talk of college football world right now with his little outburst in during the game against Fresno State. And now I think the question would be, how do we feel about Trent Bray as a head coach? I still like him as a head coach later on down the road. I just don't know that he's going to get the time to figure it out with Oregon State. Maybe with somebody else. But Trent Bray, kind of the talk, man. Awful Announcing has his stuff out there. Everybody's been retweeting it. The Trent Bray thing, it's real, and I think that we're going to start talking about it, especially with this 0-2 start, looking to be 0-4, potentially 0-5. Tough start for Trent Bray and the Bees.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for him because they have Texas Tech, then Oregon, and they're not winning those games. And then it's Houston. That they might not win that one. Then it's Appalachian State, and that's when I start to wonder if he's 0-4 at that point. Does Scott Barnes make a change? Is it possible Trent Bray just isn't fit to be a head coach, that he's a coordinator? We've seen this before. Mark Helfrich at Oregon comes to mind. I wonder about a guy like Mike Riley, who's sitting around Corvallis, drinking coffee, hanging out. Could you bring Riley in, demote Bray midseason? I think it's on the table if they continue to struggle.
Are we really thinking 2 years or 1.5 years and Bray's out?
I'm not, though. All he had to do was win this game. Like, all he had to do was find a way to get a W, and they were ahead late. They had their opportunities despite the long snapping. They couldn't hold the, you know, the narrow lead with a minute 16 to go. Just a lot of question marks. But when you don't have discipline in talking to your halftime reporter and you don't have discipline on the field, people start to talk.
Yeah. Six pre-snap penalties, and you outgained Fresno State 544-320. You should win the game.
Moving on to three.
No excuse except for that's a head coaching thing.
Number three.
Well, Steve Sarkisian, speaking of head coaches, he's feeling the heat a little bit, John, as they got the win over San Jose State. They didn't cover, by the way. I thought that was pretty interesting. They didn't really put it on them as much as we thought that they might. But after the game, Sarkisian was asked about Arch Manning. Then there's a picture of Arch Manning get hit, and he's making kind of a weird face, like a little grimace. And he was asked about that. And he said, you know, I don't know. I've never filmed any of you guys when you're using the restroom. So I don't know what faces you might make when you're doing that. End quote. Sark seems like he's feeling the heat a little bit with the 1-1 start. Arch Manning not looking as good as we thought he might be going into the season as the Heisman candidate. Sark feeling the heat a little bit, you think? Or is that
it's just not it lines up with the Trent Bray thing. It's just not becoming. It tells me that you don't sort of have the royalty, and the, you know, it's just like, you know, you're on camera, you're talking to reporters. It's just not becoming, you know, and it's unbecoming of a head coach to speak that way and talk that way. And it makes me wonder about other things.
Number four.
Well, we had a unbelievable game last night on Sunday Night Football between the Bills and the Ravens. But during the game, after a Derrick Henry touchdown, a fan actually hit Derrick Henry in the head. Lamar Jackson saw him do that and then didn't react. The fan then hit Lamar Jackson, and Lamar Jackson turned around and shoved the fan in the crowd and shoved him backwards. Now, no flags are called. Lamar Jackson obviously stayed in the game, but after the game, Lamar did apologize and said he should not have done that. But I think we need to fans to not be hitting players, even if it is like a celebratory thing. Let's just leave him alone and stop hitting people. But Lamar was sorry that he did hit the fan, but just don't do that.
They'll tell you at football stadiums, they always talk about sight lines and being closer to the field than ever before. That becomes kind of like a thing, a selling point of seats that are down low. But we've seen it in NBA games, where we're seeing it in NFL games, where the fans are reaching across that barrier and they're making it easier than ever to get to him. I don't like the fan putting hands on a player. I don't like the player putting hands on a fan. This shouldn't be a thing. The NFL needs to do a better job of separating the church and the state here, for example. Moving on.
Number five.
And finally, we got Monday Night Football to wrap up week one here, right here on 750 The Game after this show. If you're in Portland, it's the Vikings and the Bears in Chicago, NFC North rivalry here. Caleb Williams, year two right now, versus JJ McCarthy, year two. Now, of course, McCarthy was hurt all of last season, but Caleb had an up and down year for the Bears. Right now, the Vikings are 1.5-point favorites on the road. Give me Chicago, John. John, Bears will win this thing outright.
I'm a big Caleb Williams guy, and I don't know how I ended up in that position. I think you and I feel the same way. Like, he came on our show a few times. We couldn't help but like him. We didn't want to like him. Watch him struggle. This is like the antithesis of what Jaden Daniels went through a year ago, where everything was just rosy and clean and looked easy. Caleb Williams was running for his life. He looked like a quarterback on Tecmo Bowl who was just running backwards before throwing the ball. But I'm eager to see how much better the Bears can be this season. He's a really good player. And unfortunately, he goes down among these great quarterbacks who get drafted high by a team that just doesn't have a lot around him. And the offensive line was bad in Chicago. So let's see how much better the Chicago Bears can be. And we get a chance tonight, get a nice look at that. All right. Great show today. Appreciate everybody who made time for it. We're going to be back tomorrow. Bruce Barnum, as I mentioned, among our guests. We'll have Trent Walker, the Oregon State wide receiver, later in the week. And also we'll get a visit from Sean Lewis, the San Diego State coach, among others. Trent Bray on Wednesday. Make an appointment for that one. That should be a must-listen-to radio. You know, the bald-faced truth is not here for a long time, just a good time. I also appreciate everybody out there who reads me at johnconzano.com and makes this show and my work part of their day. Thanks to you, Stephen. And we're back tomorrow with a full show tomorrow. Excited to see what happens in this Monday night game. Bald-faced truth is out.